Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the annual report work group meeting, and happy Friday. We have the full group accounted for, our two co-chairs, Carolyn Peterson and Erin Meary, and Christina Caraballo, and Brent Oliver is on as well. With that, I will turn it over to Carolyn and Erin to get us started.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our last meeting before we, well, just about the end, before we present the draft to the full HITACH. I know some really good stuff came out this week to look at, and I'm looking forward to good discussion today so we can finalize some of that. And I'll hand it over to Erin.
Yeah, happy Friday the 13th, everybody listening. Thanks to this group getting together today to talk through some of these things. We're getting into the throes of getting ready for some phenomenal work from our ONC partners as we tighten up the report and whatnot. So today is an important discussion as we look at the content and look at the meat of kind of what we want to be thinking about for the report. For our group, it's particularly important for us to look at these concepts, these topics, these issues, these items, things we're proposing, and make sure that it makes sense, that it's relevant, that we're not missing anything, and that we answer some specific, you know, questions of ourselves and making sure that this is how we want to represent items and issues and whatnot and address anything that may be gapped. So, Carolyn, do you want to take us forward?
Sure. So here is our agenda. We will go through our usual schedules and then get into a discussion of the draft. We'll have a time for public comment and then decide what next steps we have and adjourn. So if we could have the next slide, please. We're all pretty familiar with this schedule by now. The good news is we're at the point where we can review a draft and look to present that to the full HITACH next month and hopefully get approval in February and move it forward to the national coordinator. On the next slide, please. So here we've got our dates for the HITACH meeting, the in-person meeting on January 15, and then a virtual meeting on February 19. Next slide, please. So we've done, in the past few months, we've looked at the landscape analysis, the progress report on what HITACH has done, the gap analysis and the recommendations section. And this month and next month, we're ready to look at the draft of the annual report as a whole. Next slide, please. Getting into the discussion. Next. So here's the outline for the draft. I think we've covered pretty much all of these areas. And the discussion about potential future activities for HITACH is ongoing, as always. We will probably get into that somewhat in January and perhaps February as well. The next slide, please. So getting into the discussion for today, we have a couple of specific questions. First, looking at general impressions, suggestions, or concerns. Length and focus, of course, are things we should take a look at, given that we are somewhat longer than last year. Of course, we have this year the HITACH progress section as well that we didn't have last year. And then more specifics about what we might want to talk about, the tiering of topics and potential activities, and any edits to opportunities or other things that we are bringing forward. Then our next steps, well, to take, we all have until December 17th, that would be next Tuesday, to submit our written comments. I know it's quite a long report, and it may, your comments may benefit from multiple reviews, so we've given some extension to do that. And then we'll be bringing the full draft to the full HITACH on January 15. So we're about a month out, very exciting to see our work coming to fruition. So, do you want to get the discussion started, Erin?
Yeah, I think it's time to get into the meat of it. And this is important because, again, you know, last time we met, I want to say it was last time we met as an in-person HITACH, the report work group discussion took some time, and that was more of a topical discussion. This time, though, the HITACH will have something substantive in front of them. And so I can imagine the discussion being very robust, which will be fun, and I'm eager to hear that. So I think this work group really giving this a document a once over, really thinking it through and then thinking it over the next couple of weeks, sending in feedback to Michelle will be critical because it will inform, I can imagine, a robust discussion during the January 15th HITAC. So with that, let's get into it. Next slide.
Okay. Did you want to walk through the, sorry, this is Michelle, the summary table? I think that's what we discussed, because the crosswalk is slightly less pertinent to the report at this point. It's got the same information, but it has extra information that we don't need. But the summary table does show concisely the gaps and opportunities and the recommendations.
Yeah, let's do that. Yes, that's the document I had. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for in my head, because that's what I have open my screen. Yes, that.
Okay. Yeah, that's correct. Thank you.
Erin, before we start on that, can I just make a general comment? The last slide had a question on length. What are the concerns with the length? I mean, I know it's long, but to me, this is a really well-written summary that touches a lot of things. So it's a great reference on kind of the landscape of health IT in general, what the gaps are, I mean, all our focus areas. And then we did do quite a bit of work this past year. And I think having it all in one place, since it's the report to Congress, is not a bad thing. So I was just curious what the concerns were with the length.
And then Carolyn and Michelle, feel free to jump in. But in a nutshell, Christina, it was if we continue to add to this list, it may get very, very wordy and very robust. We may miss the meat of what this document, what these topics are. The additional thing was, is there any of these, we talked about this last time, should we combine, or if, you know, we need to split them up, but really is, you know, how do we get this tight and concise and get the topics that are very relevant across that are timely need to be addressed? I have not heard any concerns, rather, about this needs to be trimmed up, but rather let's not add to it unless we absolutely have to, so we don't lose substance of what this document is. And Christine or Carolyn or Michelle, if you want to add to that.
Yeah, I would say that's accurate. I'm not in favor of trimming it at all, but I think we have to be mindful that if it, at a certain point it becomes so long, people find it less useful or can't find things in it, or it's hard to tell what we think is most important. So, yeah, I think we just want to be sure we don't come up with some great ideas that add another 10 or 15 pages to it.
That's really helpful. I was planning on doing like a deeper read this weekend, so that I just wanted to make sure I was in on the same page as everybody else. So thank you.
Yep. Any other general questions? All right. If not, let's go into it then. And we've talked about these, you know, as a group already, a lot of these, but let's just kind of go, we'll go at section by section. I think it's the better way to do that. And just really think about. So let's start with that first section with the immediate opportunities under interoperability and four topics there. So we'll start with the first one there and the challenges with incorporation or reconciliation of data. And I'm not going to read the document back to you, but just in general, I mean, you know, as we're looking at that, and it's all around, you know, enabling easier integration. And from our perspective as a HITAC, you know, we're really trying to make recommendations on best practice. Is there anything with that one that you guys go, gosh, we're just missing the boat on?
Erin, this is Michelle. Let me jump in here to the from ONC's perspective. What we're hoping, since we're more familiar, obviously, with the text, and you guys are still just reading it, but we are hoping you'll still be able to refer back on the fly to what's written. We're trying to make sure that we're explaining the topic well, and that, you know, it's the right amount of text to do that. Is it too much? Is it too little? So I think we're pretty solid on what we're saying so far, but we want to know, did we explain it well in the report itself? That's the transition I'm hoping to see today. But if there are other things you want to accomplish, you know, go ahead as well.
Yeah, no, and that's what I'm asking is, I mean, does this make sense to everybody, right? Are we saying this right?
It made sense to me when I read through it, and I think the simplified version of the table was really helpful for me, from the crosswalk we've looked at previously.
Yep.
This is Brett. Could I, where would it fit in terms of if you have incorrect data, that you have sent out, and you know, through interoperability, subsequently you figure out, wait a minute, this was the wrong patient. Would that be included here under best practices on not just how to incorporate and reconcile the data, but then best practices on correcting data that's in error?
That's a good question. I thought we had talked about that with another section. I'm trying to look on this crosswalk, but I mean, it could be here too. Or we had also talked about sections that sort of reference each other because they're similar in topic, but yet, you know, it crosses multiple domains. So I don't know, Michelle, if you can point to what section you think that would be best under, or is it here?
Sorry, in the gap analysis, there's a discussion of the patient safety topic, you know,
yep.
and the role of EHRs in that. And then it's mentioned briefly again in patient matching, also in the gap
okay.
analysis.
Yep.
Yeah, it is
further
great. Down in the report.
Thank you. I apologize for not being a little bit more knowledgeable about the report itself at this
well,
point.
Well,
no,
a couple of days. So
yeah, it's on you, Brett.
As you read through, if you notice, we tried really hard, just after the crosswalk exercise, to make sure that the landscape topics, like everything shows up there to explain what the topic is, and then the gaps refer back to that. They don't like explicitly refer back, but they are built on what's in the landscape analysis and then on down. So a topic should flow from the landscape to the gap to the recommendations. So it's another thing to look for as you read to make sure that that flow is clear. So if we're not saying enough about errors up front in the landscape analysis, we might need to add more text about that.
Yep. Okay. So that's something we can look at and see if we want to highlight a little bit more once we read the full document. With lack of price transparency or the UDI, I'm just take the whole top section there, those four. Those top four under immediate. So price transparency, UDI, and then the clarification of the use on clinical data and research. If you'll just take a minute just to read those and then offer any feedback.
I thought they were pretty well done. They're tightly written. It's really clear. You can get through them quickly and know exactly what the possible activities are. I like this format.
Yeah, I do too.
I agree, Carolyn.
I agree.
The only question I came up with when I read this was on the research item. I know Clem and several others had made a focus on this, and I can appreciate it being here, you know, over a large academic medical center with the University of Texas. There is a thing for, you know, review and make recommendations and guidelines, but there may be also a play here related to a lot of work that's been going on that was cures mandated for the FDA related to human subjects and CFR, I believe it's CFR 46, I want to say, or 46 CFR rather. I believe that's right. But there's a number of initiatives that the FDA related to research and human subjects that we may want to link to, but that's really all I came up with that was perhaps something we need to expand upon. Okay. No comments about that.
So, wait, Aaron, what was that? You were saying that linking to, like, people to do the – can you repeat that? I'm sorry.
That's no problem at all. So under the human subjects rules, human research rules, FDA was required to basically harmonize with what they're doing and how the human subject regulations correlate together with what FDA does and what HHS does under the common rule. So there's got to be some harmony that's given for how you handle human subjects. And even today, there was some inquiries to the FDA from the Senate asking this question publicly, like, where has the FDA stood on this? It was mandated by CURES, and it's all around research. You know, how do you deal with human subjects? And this is all research related. So my point was, do we need to footnote that and tie back to some of the work that FDA has been doing? Because they came out and publicly said, hey, we are doing things. So how does HITACH help educate and give recommendations in conjunction with what other requirements were given for other agencies under HHS? Does that make better
sense?
I think,
Yeah, yep. I think that's a really good point. And when I'm sorry, when you were talking, I was reading and thinking at the same time. I agree, and I was trying to read this and make sure it was captured correctly, and I think it's beyond just a framework for clinical data use in research. I think it's really, what is the framework for collecting just information that's needed for research? Because I think things like social determinants of health, things like such as environment, are important and may or may not be collected in the clinical systems. So it's really establishing a whole framework / ecosystem that is going to enable research to be better through data and information. And I think it's beyond just linking to the clinical systems.
Mm-hmm.
It may be an opportunity also to call out collaboration with FDA, which is something that some of the HITECH members have brought up in previous conversations.
I agree, and I think it's CDC as well is doing research-focused initiatives. I've read a couple. So I do think this could be a little broader.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good feedback. All right. If no other comments, then we can go to longer term opportunities here to keep on time. Let's look at the first page here. So these four items, the PDMPs, the improved patient matching, the capture of social determinants, and EHR-related adverse patient safety events. Let's take a minute to read those, please. Okay, feedback, thoughts?
I like the ideas of holding hearings to get educated on new and emerging technologies and approaches to things. I think that kind of stuff, individually, we may miss that in the news if it's not something that happens to be well connected to our personal areas of informatics and the kinds of work we do. So I think that would be very useful for the HITECH. Both in understanding what is on the landscape as well as thinking about future activities.
Mm-hmm. Brett, you were saying something?
I was going to add on the PDMPs. I think there needs to be an analysis of current business practices that may lead to interoperability challenges with PDMPs. And that may well be answered with information blocking rules that emerge, but I think that's a stumbling block right now. You've got one company that monopolizes this and really dictates a lot of the exchange.
That's a fair comment.
As an action item, an analysis of the current business practices that might hinder PDMP exchange.
Okay.
So I know we have to draw the line somewhere, but considering the priority on health IT addressing the opioid crisis and the importance of patient matching, I'm wondering why these are long-term. I guess when I read the specific recommendations around PDMP and what it can help, it makes sense that it's in this bucket, but the patient matching one is standing out a little bit to me. I just like to discuss why that's in the long term as opposed to the nearer term.
Michelle, I'll jump in just as a reminder that we all agreed at the last meeting that at least temporarily we would use the draft HITECH 2020 plan from October to guide so immediate versus longer term. So things that were the next year or two on the plan were immediate, and then anything further out as a possibility that's not defined yet as something that HITECH would take on in 2020 or 2021 would be longer term. So that's what we're letting guide us at the moment. That could shift, I guess, in January when it's presented again. I'm not sure. I don't have insight because I'm not part of that subcommittee within ONC, but things could shift category just based on that plan alone. But also I think the work group has a chance to say, no, we strongly believe this should be done sooner.
So just so I make sure
that
was from ONC's priorities then, not HITECH priorities.
Well, correct? It was a joint effort with the co-chairs of the HITECH so far and ONC planning, like Elise and Seth and Lauren.
But we could asterisk this and say, you know, let's talk about it as a committee in January and see if there's a consensus there, Christina, that the committee would like to highlight that we should consider, I was going to say elevating the urgency, but there's already urgency. So, I mean, just making this a near-term versus a or immediate opportunity versus a longer-term opportunity.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think when I read through the report, one of the things I want to see if it's in there or not is kind of like with the patient matching, maybe it's identified as something that is a big challenge, but a lot of work I know is being done right now, and maybe it's not immediate because we just don't think we can solve it in 2 years. I don't know if that's correct or not, but as we're reading through the report, we should think through things like that as well, like what's tangible and what's not, and where we keep moving along and where others in the industry kind of taking a lead that isn't the HITECH.
That's fair. Or what's, you know, difficult because of regulatory challenges, case in point, in patient matching, what's allowed or not allowed or what's permissible or not permissible under the law, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think if we can kind of have that story together when we present these to the HITECH with the rationale, it would make for a better discussion with the whole group.
Interesting. So you're suggesting a companion document to go to this, maybe an appendix of the report that gives the logic for why we elected to go immediate versus longer term for various items here.
That would be nice. For the record, I did not just add a task. I think I would just challenge us as we're reading through this before our December 17th deadline to think about it, and then maybe we can decide the best approach after. Some of this language might already exist in the report, and we've kind of been working in this grid and less in the report. So it's kind of just a thought.
It's a fair thought. I could see a lot of debate happening because of a lack of understanding or a lack of just insight from the committee, not for any other reason. So it would help expedite conversation to be more substantive versus immediate versus long-term decisions.
Exactly.
Carolyn, what do you think about that?
I was just looking at this chart thinking, is there a way to do like a little footnote that, you know, if at the end of each one there's an asterisk or a hanging cross or something, and then at the bottom of the page the reference, this comes from X document, this comes from Y document, then we wouldn't have to create additional sections or additional text and people wouldn't be flipping around. They could just see that it was categorized that way as a result of some other document.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be workable, do you think?
Kelly, what other documents are you thinking of? Because right now I just know of the HITECH planning draft. Is there some other document you're referring to?
Well, whatever the other logic is for how things got put into one category or another.
Yeah, let's play with it. I think let's play with it and let's talk about offline what makes sense and what doesn't put too much too much on Michelle's team to help us tease out.
Well, and for usability too, because if we have an appendix, then people have to refer back and forth, and that's kind of cumbersome also. But we can work on this more.
Okay. That was a good comment, Christina. Those are good comments. What else? Brett, what are you thinking?
No, I'm just still analyzing. I think what Carolyn said, I like that approach. Nothing else to add right now.
Okay. All right. Should we go to the next page, Carolyn?
Sure.
Okay, let's go to page 2. So at the very top of page 2, you had the last bullet item from this previous section. So let's include that, please, in terms of reviewing. But let's take a minute to look at the first there, immediate opportunities in a privacy and security, including that one bullet at the top from the previous section, please. Okay. Thoughts? Questions?
I thought this was really well written and clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a nice tight way of conveying the many, many things that we talk about when we're talking about privacy and security.
I agree. I really can't think of anything to add.
I think it's very well done. The only question I have is, and I know we covered in the text of the report, or will cover it in the text of the report, really pulling out that section number 4 under that first immediate opportunity with third-party access. My only question is, as time goes on, about how much focus is being given right now to third-party access. Does that merit its own section? And I'm not trying to encourage us to keep adding bullets, but is that something so important that we want to make it its own thing? Because I do think third-party access is going to become one of the key issues that will eventually drive future legislation. It's inevitable. There's just too much ambiguity. That's just my 2 cents, though.
Well, certainly.
I think you're right, Aaron. Does the structure of the report need it to be separate? Are you saying it's going to be less important if it's identified as number 4 in this section versus calling it out?
Yeah, I don't know if I would say less important as much as I don't want folks to just let it get buried in the text, right?
Gotcha.
So, Aaron, would you phrase the gap and opportunity differently that would match this recommendation?
I think it would match. I'm just saying, you know, should we tease it out and make it its own specific thing?
And that's what I'm trying to figure out, how that would fit in the structure of the report. If it's the same, how would we call it out differently?
Well, we would pull out a section and call it, privacy and cybersecurity rules for third-party access, right? So you would have lack of clear privacy rules and data not subject to HIPAA protections, boom, boom, boom. And then we'd have something specific on third-party access and right of access and the disparity between, you know, state law and federal law and all the things that are there that add and contribute to this, and the lack of a clear agency of jurisdiction, that sort of thing. But again, I mean, we do talk about it here, but I just want to make sure that, does anybody feel like this isn't, there's not enough spotlight on this issue? If it's a number 4, are we okay? That's my question.
I mean, I think it's a fair point that you make. I agree with you that it's only going to gather steam moving forward. I don't have enough experience with a report like this to know if it's left as it is, does that make it less apparent or not?
Would you like it better, Aaron, if it was number one rather than number four?
I think that would be helpful, yes. I just something to just, again, I'm not trying to elevate it or escalate it. We need to make sure that people don't, they don't lose sight that we recognize as a committee the importance of clarifying some of the ambiguity out there in industry, which I know a lot of folks are working on and thinking about and mulling over how to do this, but I think it should match. That's my two cents.
Yeah, no, I think it's a higher priority than some of the other activities. I think making it number one would be helpful as a start.
Okay.
Agree. So on this, the other thing I want to point out is the second one with social determinants of health. I think we should add PGHD to that as well.
Yep.
There is talk of PGHD in another section, so we have to decide if we want to combine these somehow or have them duplicate.
I just think it's different. Like social determinants of health are data that can come from a patient or a provider, but patient-generated health data is data that is generated by the patient. And I think they're both important in here. I think you can just do a slash.
There's a use in sharing of PGHD section in the landscape analysis that we carried over from last year. I'm trying to find a matching part in the gap. In the gap, we still have barriers to use in sharing of PGHD as a separate section. And it should show up in your summary chart as well. I think it's down in the patient access area instead of up here.
But I think I see your point, Christina. You're saying that it's both, it's social determinants as well as patient generated data that fit into this category under the facilitate the more exchange safely, all that sort of thing like that. Would the recommendation be the same, though, for both? I don't think so, right?
I just disappeared. Okay, there.
I see your point. I think they're both important, right? So how do you do that? How do you do like a 1A and 1B?
Yeah.
Do you just bullet it like we did, you know, that first one there? I mean, because you're right. We do need to think about that. All right, let's highlight that, and we can discuss that over email. Let's just keep the time here. But I think that's a fair point. Does PGHD need to be there? And then, two, how would we work through that on this one?
Yeah, and I'll pay attention when I read the section dedicated to PGHD. But I'm thinking it probably needs a space in the privacy and security section.
Okay. All right. Any other comments on this top section? All right. Let's move over. Sorry, go ahead.
I said I didn't have any.
All right. Let's move to the longer term opportunities, starting with that variability of information sharing policies, and then that kind of goes over to the next page. So it's three items. Let's take a minute to read those. All right, I'll start first with a comment I had when I read this section. Under the de-identified data, the more I talk to folks, the more I realize how varying the definition of de-identified data actually means. Well, I realize there's a HIPAA definition, right? How do you de-identify data to meet HIPAA? I think everybody accepts the premise now that it's not as difficult as it used to be to reconstruct de-identified data and find specific correlations in data or even potentially specific patients in de-identified data due to uniqueness of data sets and data provenance. So I was just going to ask, should there be a bullet in that number two section there under new technology capabilities to re-identify de-identified data that we talk about what does de-identified data actually mean and help level set that across the industry or something to that effect?
A definition of sorts, Aaron?
A definition, a method to actually de-identify, or we call it something different, maybe obfuscation. Some degree of obfuscation of data, because de-identified means I cannot really tell who is this at all when that's not really the case anymore, depending on the data set and depending on the definition you follow.
Well, that gets the debate that I've been hearing more in the AMIA space, where there's a recognition that de-identification is an administrative process that involves removing certain pieces of information as a process, but that individuals, because the term de-identify is used, assume that it means that you can't figure out who that data relates to or identify me as a result of what you've done, and,
mm-hmm.
and that is really not the case.
It's
an unfortunate choice of word in the current age we live in, you know, which is, of course, much different from when HIPAA was written.
Right. You hit the nail on the head. And that's my question is, should there be like a number three here on that says something to that effect, that we need to really look at that and help the industry understand how to truly de-identify and or, you know, re-term it and or work with, you know, the various powers that be at helping to recoin this or reconstitute it or re-implement across the industry, because particularly as it relates to research, you know, you try to do as much as you can with de-identified data, unless it's a specific cohort where you have consent. And it concerns me every single day just how we have these data sets that once upon a time, to your point, Carolyn, you know, we're as secure as you could possibly be. There's no way to reconstitute them. Now with the power of computing, I mean, it's not that difficult as it used to be if you truly have that intent.
Well, and that gets at the question of, do we have a parallel activity similar to others in the draft that getting at patient education about what de-identification means, what it does and doesn't do, you know, the fact that it's an administrative process, not an actual event that protects you necessarily.
Right. That's exactly right. Brett, Carolyn, or Christina, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with what you said. About it.
Yeah, I think defining terms and current capabilities are helpful.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we could even hold a hearing to talk to some of these folks that have been publishing their work about re-identification. I mean, I remember seeing a study out of Australia with an organization that had done that, and several others have been reading about. So people have been publishing some great work on it, and I'm sure they would be more than helpful to help educate the committee and help us come up with ways to, you know, appropriately inform and educate the public and organizations and research organizations. I mean, I'm sure, you know, even folks like, you know, all of us and others would be helpful to come in and talk to us. So that's a potential activity.
I agree. I think that space is exploding.
What would we change about them? We do have education and conveniently listening session, but are they not focused quite right? Is that what you're saying?
Or yeah, that's exactly right. I think there's one thing about it, just sort of general education about, you know, this is what it is and this is how you use it versus this is what de-identified means in this day and age and this is what you need to do in order to appropriately protect, you know, your patients or protect that data set or however. I just think there needs to be a little bit more focus on the fact that de-identified doesn't mean de-identified anymore, at least in the sense that it used to be. So my proposal, Michelle, to be specific, is to add another bullet on here where we as a high tech define what de-identified really means and or any other terminology that needs to start being used, and then help propagate that or educate the industry on that and the ramifications of not following, you know, recommended principles.
Okay. And I'll just point out to you as a review. Let me finish one thing, then I'll get to Brett. Page 27 of the landscape analysis does have a definition under HIPAA regulations of what de-identified means. So if we want to change that or de-emphasize that definition, we can do that. We just would want you to look at that page, page 27.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I was saying earlier, the definition of de-identified from a HIPAA perspective, I understand clearly, but even a de-identified data set under HIPAA is still identifiable with using today's technology. And so that's the point I'm making, is that gap, whatever you call that, we need to at some point highlight, educate, address in some form or fashion. And then Brett, you were saying something, sir.
Well, that's fine. Yeah, I was agreeing with you that I think, yeah, there's a definition of HIPAA, but it's not a practical definition any longer.
Right.
So that's part of the listening session or education that needs to happen. What's the definition for de-identified and perhaps in even different settings for research purposes, for a patient's understanding if they're giving consent for an MRI. If I give consent for an MRI and it says it's de-identified, if you're still getting a picture of my face, the recent study is showing that we can identify who you are by your MRI. So
that's right.
Of your head. So, you know, there's some fascinating things going on. And I think we can educate the public on the HIPAA definition of de-identified. I'm not sure that does them any good with current technology. I think that's what you were getting at, Aaron.
That's exactly right. No, nail on the head. Nail on the head. Any other comments on this section?
It kind of feels like everything ought to be a short-term issue, but I know that by the way we've decided to break them out, that's not the case. But just thinking about the cybersecurity situation, of course, de-identification.
Mm-hmm.
It's all important, right? But
it's all important. We need to do it all.
Some things are more important than other things, but it's still all important.
It's all important. That's the hardest part about this. This is literally a 1A and 1B. I mean, they're all critical. These are all issues. But we would be doing a disservice to ourselves if we try to bite off more than we can chew, and then we don't get anything, you know, the high quality that we've been producing for the past year and a half. You know, we water it down. So we have to figure out where that line is, right? Okay. Let's go to the next section there under, if there's no other comments, patient access to information. Take a minute to read the immediate opportunity section, please. And we'll, yeah. All right, thoughts, questions? The only thought I had on the first one there with limited accessibility, from a perspective of being the University of Texas, one of the things that we do is make sure that everything is also ADA compliant. And that's everything from color schemes to what we develop, what we use, everything, right? We try to make sure that that's a conscious thought process. I know we talk about accessibility and usability and other things like that, but is it important to call out the importance of ADA conformance particularly as development moves offshore, as we develop more software, engage with many more partners in the community, I've realized a lack of understanding, not for negligence, but just because they just don't know, of a lot of major development partners, particularly offshore, particularly as it's cheaper to develop in other countries. They do great work, they just don't know. And so I spend a lot of time educating, and I'm wondering how many other organizations face that, and I think that's a critical component for patient access.
Well, when I was reading the accessibility term in the document, I was assuming that it was ADA, disability accessibility, but certainly we could change the language to make that clearer.
Right. I would think like you would just put a kind of brackets beside accessibility and put ADA compliance, language, multi-language compliance, kind of give a few bulleted examples there so folks know that accessibility means a lot of things, not just being able to pull it up on a smart device of any sorts. I don't know, Christina or Brett.
Under the plan, would part of that be evaluate why there's been low adoption of patient portals as well? Or are we just assuming because it's usability? I would argue that sometimes there's something else going on besides just usability.
That's fair.
I mean, I know Dr. Rucker and ONC wants everybody to have all their medical information on their phone, and probably most of the high tech gets that. But I'll be honest, our organization, we've got we have 35% signed up for our portal, but the usage is still pretty limited. And then certainly something like Apple Health that we have, it's even lower than that. And so why is that? Is it hard to get on your phone? Well, it's no more difficult.
Right. No, I agree with you. I totally agree.
Yeah. Just investigating that, are we not providing them the information they need? Is it not, again, is it not usable? That's one thing, but I'm not convinced that's it.
Yeah, we too rolled out Apple Health, and I mean, we blasted out on all of our televisions and all of our clinics, and we have signs posted, and we have people that will help you. And I mean, the adoption rate has been very slow, unfortunately. People still want it all printed up or emailed to them securely or something like that. They just don't want to put it. I don't know what the deal is. We try. But I do think some of it's awareness. I mean, a lot of people remark to us, because we capture why people, there's low adoption. We talk to our patients, and especially when we do NPS, Net Promoter Score, when they leave, and the feedback we get is a lot of people don't even realize that their phone has that capability. So maybe you're right, Brett. Maybe it is education. So accessibility is, compliance with all these things, but then also how do we get the word out even better or smarter or whatever else?
And I suppose as I reread this, Michelle, that I guess you could include what I'm saying in evaluate the patient's portals and patient-facing mobile apps, operational effectiveness, patient engagement, and or patient understanding. That's potentially part of that.
I really like number two. And I think a lot of this conversation can tie into what is learned from that one. Whole new roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
Who's defining the roadmap there? Quote experts? Is that what we're...
That's a good question.
Or is that a roadmap that we would create after listening?
Me, I read it like a deep dive of kind of the whole framework that around patient engagement, like what are the gaps, what are the challenges, what's happening now, and we had discussed in one of our work groups taking a look at the patient engagement framework that was already done by ONC and kind of doing a review and revamp of it and address some of these issues to patient access that we've uncovered over the last few years, and like understanding why aren't patients using their portals, like you just said, Aaron. So to me, it's kind of a whole market assessment with recommendations on how to make it better. But I could just be reading that because I would like that.
I mean, the bottom line is this. People will post on social media every facet of their life, yet somehow there's a lack of engagement with their own medical record, generally speaking, no matter what we do. Same modality, same everything. So what's the sticky that we're missing, right? There's got to be something more to it.
Well, I think that some of the mobile interfaces leave something to be desired, just in the sense of it being a very small screen where you're trying to absorb complex information. That's not always a good fit. And, you know, people hear also about how you need to protect your information and not say or do certain things in public settings. That can work against people's willingness to look at stuff, you know, unless they're in their house. And if you're in your house, why wouldn't you look at it on a regular computer where the usability is better, et cetera? I mean, I think that the smartphone is not the best way to do a lot of the things that you technically can do on the smartphone. And I think sometimes people have some reluctance there without really appreciating it.
That's true.
You know, my idea of a good display is sort of like the Johnson Space Center, the wall of monitors. I would have 6 monitors if I could figure out a way to hook them all up to my computer. So when I look at the smartphone, it's like, nah. But that's me. All right, are we ready to move on to the longer term?
Yeah, let's do it. So it's really just that PGHD one that's on there, right? Because it goes over to the next page, right?
So, Christina, looking at this placed here, what are you thinking about the place above where we talked about PGHD and noting that?
Yeah, I still think, I mean, this bullet, the second recommendation is related to privacy and security, so it makes sense that it's in that section.
In this section or above?
In the privacy and security section.
Okay.
That's my opinion.
That makes sense to me, too. I just wanted to be sure I knew what you meant.
Yeah. And since this is all by itself, let's just bump it up.
So what gap and opportunity would we tie it to? Would it be this determinants of health? Well, actually, it was lack of control up above.
If you go back up to the privacy and security section, I think it's almost, it might need a little editing, but a copy and paste of the bullets with social determinants of health and then just insert PGHD. Does that work?
Yeah, I'm trying to find where you are exactly. So if you're on page 2 of the summary, is it the lack of control over sharing and disclosing information gap that you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. And then under opportunity, is it linked to either existing opportunity or do we need to create another one?
I think based on the discussion we just had, they're different. So creating a new one.
Yeah, I think that number one there can stay where it is in this last section on longer term opportunities. And that number two probably needs to get moved up with its own gap and opportunity text.
So is it not part of the gap about lack of control over sharing and disclosing information? That's what I heard. I thought I heard Christina saying that it might be part of that gap but needs a new opportunity.
Well, I just don't want to see the whole item go up to privacy and security and be taken out of this this part of the report. I think that
right.
it needs to be in both in some iteration.
I think it's number two, review actions already underway regarding privacy and security breaches involving PGHD, right?
Right.
Right. That would go up.
Yeah.
Right.
And get its own gap and opportunity.
So I'm trying to pin down so we can work on it, what that gap and opportunity might be. Is it not the existing gap that we were talking about before on page two about lack of control? Is it a new kind of gap? Or is it more just a separate opportunity within that gap?
Okay. So this privacy and security breaches, can we go back up? Or I can use it on my computer. I've got it up.
And in the reports on page 35, the gap description?
I think they're two different areas. So maybe still a lack of control over sharing and disclosing information. I'm thinking out loud. I don't mind trying to play with this one when I send my edits back.
Okay. Do you have thoughts on how to phrase the opportunity?
Well,
is it similar to the social determinants of health, or is it something different?
That's what I kind of wanted to give some thought to, because this one has the privacy and security breaches, which is one thing, and then the other one, it was more about facilitating the exchange. So there's a difference between breaches and feeling safe to exchange and share the data. So I think they're two separate things. So I'd almost put it like add another one. So if you look at the lack of control over sharing and disclosing information, then you do another item that's kind of almost swaps out social determinants of health for PGHD, and adds it, because there's two sub-bullets under that. So you'd have a third under that lack of control over sharing and disclosing information. And then
right. This
might be an actual separate one, because it's on privacy and security breaches.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I think I'm following what you're saying.
But we should probably think through that a little bit. I want to read it and play with it. I'm not sure that's the best approach. But I think my point is they're kind of three isolated thoughts, and I'm not sure if we should consolidate or not. Other thoughts?
It feels like keeping them separate helps to express the various dimensions, but if the weight of opinion by others was different, I wouldn't argue and push back.
That's kind of how I feel. I want to look at the text and how it's written to see how it best fits, but again, I don't mind thinking through that as I'm doing my more deep review this weekend and making a suggestion for everyone to react to.
Yeah, that's fair. Let's go that route.
Agreed. Okay. Any other comments or questions? That's the end of this document.
I don't have any.
Okay. Michelle, did we answer everything that you needed to be answered?
Yeah, I think at a general level, yes. Especially that idea of, is the length okay? Because I know the co-chairs and ONC had talked about options for that, but we hadn't really come to agreement of what is the right length. So there wasn't really a guideline for that, but I think getting that feedback today that it's actually looking okay to all of you, and yeah, as you read it, you'll think that through that again and see if there are places that it's still too long or maybe even we need more text. Just let us know. I think you did cover the concept of getting a little closer on the actionable language, and then as you read it, think about that again. Are there ways to make it easier for the high tech to tackle something? And I want to point out, too, that the high tech 2020 plan, the way we linked to it was saying it might start in those years rather than the activity have to be completed in that time period. So we know some things could take several years. So it's really just what should we get started on in the next year or two as far as immediate opportunities.
Right. All right. Carolyn, let me turn it back over to you.
Okay. So we've covered length and focus. We've gone through crosswalk. We've talked about tiers in terms of what's in the crosswalk. Summary table. Trying to think what else we can do today, what else we want to do, given that we really haven't had a lot of time to look at the larger draft.
I feel good, Caroline. I think we've substantively looked at this, talked about it, considered it, worked through it, given great feedback. I mean, I feel good about let's take some time and over the next week or two and review really thoughtfully and really think about things. And then we talk about it some more after the new year. But, I mean, I feel pretty good with today's progress.
Okay. How about you, Brett and Christina?
Yeah,
I think
I'd like a little bit more time to dig into the text itself. I just haven't yet. But so far, I feel good about where we are.
Do you want a little insight on our timeline the next couple of weeks?
Sure.
Okay. We're crunched in a nutshell because we took our time to do the crosswalk and get our alignment right. So it does mean we are shorter on the amount of time to edit on the draft than we had hoped for. So that's why we're pushing for comment from you by the 17th, because then ONC has a couple of days to work with our contractor to do any writing, research that we need, get another draft together, and then by the end of that week, we need to get it to our senior leadership because they really haven't had a chance to look at this. They wanted to look at it before, you know, pretty soon before it went to the high tech in January. But then the government, a lot of us have leave, so we're off mostly the last week or so of December. We regroup when we get back in January. But then it's quick then, too, because the high tech needs a week or so to review. So we need to turn it around by about the 7th or 8th to finalize the document to get it ready to send out. I'm probably on the 9th. I do have a co-chair call set up now on the morning of the 9th to finalize it. So there's really only a small window, a few days before the holidays and a few days after that ONC can help you make changes.
Well, I think if with the 17th being the date that we need to get our written comments to you, I think that's fine. That has given us a week to do that. And I would think if there was any, when I looked at it, I didn't have a sense that there was anything that might jump out at us and require a major rework. I think it's probably a lot of small track changes kind of stuff. But if there is, we can certainly, by email, try to figure out how to touch base about that, any small items.
I agree with you, Carol. I don't think there'll be any large substantive changes.
It seemed to me that it's in pretty good shape. It's minor tweaks at this point, if there's really much to do at all.
Yep.
All right. Seeing that we feel like we've completed what we wanted to do today, are we able to go to public comment, Lauren?
Sure. Yeah, I know we're just a little bit ahead, but let's go ahead to public comment and see if there's anyone on the line. Operator, can we open the line?
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thank you. And do we have any comments in the queue?
There are no comments at this time.
Okay. Michelle, anything else from your end that we should cover?
No, I think we're in a good place, and I'm looking forward to hearing your comments.
Okay. Well, it sounds like we'll give you guys some time back to review the report. And thank you for your time today, and we'll see you all in January.
Thank you.
Have a good holiday.
Happy holidays.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.